Welcome to episode 31 of Podwarp 1999, The Chimes of Big Ben. With me today is Tom Truskowski of Station V3 and its various spin-offs.
Hello.
And Tom Bellaringa of Marooned Comic. Marooned.com, isn't it?
Maroonedcomic.com.
Maroonedcomic.com, thank you. And I am Mark Meckes, taking his first shot at actually introducing this festivities. I do the comic Zortik at Zortik.com and ETIPI at ETI-PI.com, something like that. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Station V3 is StationV3.com, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So, Tom.
Yeah.
I feel left out because I'm the only one here not named Tom. if you guys feel the need to refer to me as Tom, just keep things straight.
We can go ahead and do that. All right. Right.
Absolutely. Okay.
Take it away, Tom.
Yeah. go ahead. Tell us about Marooned.
Okay. Let's start it at about 9 months ago. And I had been playing with some drawing. It actually started out as I was doing digital stuff in Illustrator just for fun, and then I decided this might be fun to do. And I was doing it in Illustrator, and I didn't like the digital format of it, and I really liked the analog actually drawing. So I started drawing, and I was actually doing it with a nib pen and everything. And I played around with different designs, and it was quite different than it is now. And so finally, I got like 12 strips figured out, and it was very much of a gag-driven thing. And so I said, well, I'll throw it together on a website, and I'll put it up there. And I really had no plans past the 12. And then as I got into it, I really, kind of enjoyed doing it. And but I realized, like I said, after these 12, I had nowhere to go. I had no plan at all. And I also realized that I didn't really want to do so much of a gag thing, because I'm much more interested in stories, particularly with the science fiction. So I started to come up with a story, and so I kind of had to really come up with something fairly quick, and luckily I was able to smash some things together and come up with a kind of a summary. And so as it kind of went, I kind of started building up this thing that eventually became the Saga of Bob and the first story here. And I had some sputters and starts, but I kind of jumped from this gag, kind of, silly jokes that really had no context at all. I was just trying to be funny for the sake of being funny, to trying to have humor based on what the situation was with the characters. So that's kind of how it evolved. And I went from once a week to 2 a week a few months ago. I mean, actually longer than a few months ago, but. And that's basically what's been going on ever since. So like I said, it's been going since March, and so it'll be a year this March.
Nice.
You've been experimenting with different ways to draw it. I know you said you started out with the dip pen, but...
Right. It took too long, unfortunately, because I like working with it. I wasn't very skilled with it, but, eventually that might have come with time, but it just took just far too long to do. And because I like the line quality and the stuff that you can get with a dip pen, but like I said, and with getting the right consistency of the ink and all this stuff and everything, and so I kind of bit the bullet and said, well, especially at the beginning, I was like, I'm nobody anyway, so I figured I just grabbed some microns and you found out what people used and just started doing it that way, and it's been pretty much a continual experimentation ever since then. I've actually just started using the brush pens. And so, it's definitely a learning experience. I've tried the Copic and the Micron, and I'm not very good at it right now, but I like some of the effects that you can get, so I'm kind of working my way through it, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, because I started out with the dip pens too, and it took some time and had some problems.
Yeah.
I think that's a big secret of anything. It's just, finding something, and you're not going to be good with it at first, but you're going to grow into it.
Yeah.
Right. I even tried a brush. I even spent the money on a good brush, and that was just a disastrous affair. if you've ever tried it, anybody who knows how to do it will tell you it's a tough skill to master, and when you first start at the beginning, I mean, it's almost impossible to do anything. And I just don't have the time, you know. I mean, like a lot of us, I work full-time. I have a family. I have a wife and two kids. And it's just, you know, I don't have, you know, hours and hours to spend every day, which is what you really need to do, you know. I mean, I'm not a teenager anymore. I can't, you know, spend all the time, you know, trying to learn. So I had to do something that, you know, I can spend the least amount of time on and still try and get the best result possible. And, you know, so you make that compromise.
Sure.
Yeah.
It makes sense. It's,
yeah.
it's a balancing thing with that sort of
Absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely. Yep. And then I found as you kind of ramp up on things, like, you know, when I first started doing it, obviously it was taking a long time and just trying to figure out how to, you know, set up the Photoshop file to, you know, to be the best workable way and, you know, how to color it properly and everything. But as those times compressed and, you know, as the penciling times came down a little and then you start, you know, playing with other things. And that's, you know, when I decided to jump back and try the brush pen again. And so it's like, you know, it seems like as you, I don't want to say master, but as you become more proficient with some things, then, you know, sometimes you can take a little bit of that saved time and experiment somewhere else, which is kind of what I've done.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Do you have any kind of art training background or?
I do actually have a BA in fine art, to be honest. So
okay.
I from Columbia College Chicago, I went to Illinois State for a while and I transferred to Columbia, and I really kind of have a graphic design degree, but when I got there, the way my credits transferred and everything, they were basically like, well, you know, if you want your actual degree to say graphic design, then you've got to go through the actual take all the actual classes. It would have been like another 2 years for me. She's like, but you can get a fine art degree and you can take whatever class you want. I was like, oh, okay, well, that's great. So I took, you know, just the coolest classes that interested me the most. So, but I fell into graphic design and web work, basically. So for years, I didn't draw. I didn't do anything creative as far as, you know, this type of thing. So when I got back into this, I was really rusty, and I still feel like I'm pretty rusty. I mean, it's literally been years since I spent any time with a pencil or sketched or anything. So I'm only now feeling like I'm starting to draw average.
That's tough to get back. Yeah.
Yeah, it really is.
The fine arts degree is probably a little more helpful than, say, a BS in math and computer science.
Yeah, possibly. At least I was familiar with the tools somewhat, so that helped.
Of course, I did write my own automation script, but hey.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. It helps with different things, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still trying to figure out how to design a web page, so, you know, what can you do?
Yep.
Go with your strengths.
Yes. So do you have, you said you're starting to kind of segue into more of a storyline type of arc. Do you have an overall storyline planned, or is this kind of a making it up as you go along type thing? And
At the moment, it's kind of both, actually. So let me explain. So, like I said, after the first initial batch, I had, you know, kind of had no idea, and then I did come up with some ideas, and I wrote a bunch of kind of backstory. You know, I kind of put my ideas down in a document, and I kind of came up with a high-level summary of what was going on. And I figured out, you know, with this evil robot Bob who got introduced, and I figured out where I was going to go with the story, because if you're going to write a story, you kind of need to know where you're going. So I knew where it was going to end up and everything. So I had just enough, like, waypoints along the way where I knew, you know, kind of what the major events would be and what the major characters were. And then within that structure, that really loose structure, I kind of wrote. So it's like I was hitting these mile markers as I would go generally, and within those it gave me enough wiggle room to kind of be creative and kind of let the story, you know, kind of flow a little bit. So that worked out pretty well. So right now, the kind of climax of that story happened a few weeks ago, and maybe more like a month ago. It's been it's 4 weeks now. So it's kind of in wrapping up mode, and they're kind of exploring, how this guy got here, and they're looking at his ship and everything, and there's going to be some mystery revealed and everything, but it's going to, you know, it's definitely an ongoing thing. meanwhile, I know what the next what starts the next whole story arc.
Okay.
Where there's going to be some new characters introduced, and so I have like, I don't know, 40% of that written maybe. I'm still don't know where I'm ultimately going with it yet, and so I just need to figure out. But it's going to be the same process. I'm going to have this kind of, you know, high level summary. It's almost like a pitch. If you're making a pitch for a graphic novel or something, it's kind of like that. It's, you know, kind of tells you what happens, like say the major chapters or whatever. But it'll leave me enough freedom to kind of be, you know, maybe change directions or kind of, you know, react to new things that come up or whatever. So I just kind of got to figure out. So what I'm doing now is kind of week to week. I kind of know what I'm doing to wrap it up, but I'm writing it week to week, but that's kind of building a bridge to the next story.
Okay. Yeah. Do you work ahead at all? Do you have any kind of buffer, or do you work, cranking out as you go?
Mythical buffer, but I've never really seen one. The most I think I've ever had is like two. And it's because I don't really have time, you know, to really, you know, because it takes, I don't know, it probably takes me 3 to 4 hours to produce a strip.
Yeah.
And, you know, I never have an extra 3 to 4 hours, frankly. So sometimes I get ahead writing-wise. I mean, I've been ahead at times 3 or 4 strips writing-wise. So that's at least nice, because at least when I sit down, you know, it's like, you say, you know, maybe that saves me 15 minutes, but,
yeah,
or 20 minutes, but, you know, I'll take it. So that, even that is nice, because I, you know, I could sit down at any moment and start sketching or whatever. So,
well, it always seems to me like staring at that blank piece of paper is the hardest part. And if you know what you're going to do, you can dive in and do it.
And that's why I find the kind of overall summary really helpful, because I'm not just, you know, trying to come up with something out of thin air. I at least have direction. So I can, you know, move along in the direction. Probably the biggest challenge for me is, as I'm telling the story, is to find something funny within each strip. Because I post twice a week, and there really needs to be, for the most part, there needs to be some kind of payoff on that strip to kind of keep them coming back. Because, I mean, not everybody, you know, particularly new readers, are going to come, and they're not going to know what's going on in the larger story.
Yeah.
So, the idea is to at least give them something funny, even if it's not like a knee slapper kind of funny gag, but at least some kind of situational comedy that's something funny. And I try and get some kind of payoff, either whether it's that or some kind of cliffhanger or some kind of dramatic moment, just so that there's something there for whether it's a new reader or something that hasn't been in a while, or somebody who's reading the ongoing story, but, you know, kind of keep them entertained as well. So that's probably the most challenging part.
I'm sure. I run into similar things. I mean, I update my main comic daily, but it is a similar thing. You keep the story moving and still have something funny in it.
Right, absolutely.
And I write it a similar way.
And it's a lot harder daily than twice a week, for sure. Yeah. So,
I have this similar thing there where I have the general idea of where it's going, and you know, some of the strips planned out. But then you get to the days where, you know, I have an idea what strip's coming, but it's not time for that yet. And I know where it's going, but I'm not there yet. So I still need something for today.
Yeah. And you hate to call it filler, but it's I prefer the term bridge. You're building a bridge to that next spot, but you need to get there, right?
Yeah.
The funny thing is, some of them work out better, it turns out.
Yeah, sometimes that gives you the freedom to do something a little unexpected or something a little different.
And sometimes that just completely throws things off after it. It's like, well, everything I had planned is now out
right.
The window.
I've caught a couple times that's happened to me where I've gone in a direction that was unexpected, and now you're like, ooh, I got to get back over here, but this is really interesting. And so that's always, you know, that can always be interesting, because then you got to figure all that out.
Yep. It's like you hate to throw the writing out, but, you know, well, maybe they'll get back there and we can use that sometime.
But sometimes that works to your advantage. I mean, one time what helped me was I couldn't draw something right. Because Bob, this evil robot, he had this device called the Time Cube, which was essentially a Rubik's Cube that could manipulate time. And my initial idea for it, though, was the Time Slinky, like, you know, the slinky that goes down the stairs.
Yeah.
And I'm drawing, and I just couldn't cartoony draw it right to look right. I'm like, this just isn't working. And the more I thought about it, it just, I had it drawn out, and I had the strip done, and it just looks, it looks really bad. And I was thinking about it, and I wasn't even sure how he was going to manipulate the slinky. And I, you know, the story wasn't kind of coming. I thought, well, what about a cube with the Rubik's Cube? And I drew that, and it looked good. And then I started having all kinds of ideas about how the story could work with the cube. So it's like, had I drawn that slinky right the first time I went with it, that would have been a really bad mistake. So I'm just really glad I couldn't draw that slinky right, because it ended up being so much better. So that's why I like to kind of, I just did it today. My wife was asking me, I thought you were done with that strip. And I always like to put it away for a while and then come back and take another last look at it. Just to take a kind of a fresh look at it before I post it. And today I caught something that I had totally missed. There was kind of an odd beat between the second and third panel where he failed to react to something, and I had failed to put in there, so it was, you know, and I just, you know, I had it was no big deal to add in, but I was like, you know, had I not taken that second look, I would have missed it, and I would have been, you know, bummed out that I missed that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always good to take another look at it before it goes up.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was going to say, I like the way the Time Cube story worked out, especially with the solution to how to mess Bob up with that.
Yeah, thanks. And I wasn't, you know, it's funny because I knew, like I said, I knew where I was going. I knew that they would end up in the reactor room and that, you know, Bob would kind of fail there, and then that's the place where, you know, the climax. But I didn't know, what I didn't know was how that would all happen. Yeah. And initially I thought that this, you know, new shield that Asimov got built into him by the Gaborga, you know, when they took him away, might somehow defeat him, or somehow John would defeat him. But I kind of didn't want John to do it for various reasons, and the way it ended up working out pretty good. So It all worked out in the end. But that's kind of the thing where I've got this high-level summary, but you got to kind of figure out the details as you go along. And
yeah,
sometimes that's good, and sometimes it's not so good, I guess. But
yeah,
it's kind of the way it works.
Because yeah, when you said slinky, I was immediately thinking, well, how would that have worked when they got
exactly?
Yeah.
See, because, you know, sometimes I get caught. It's easy to get caught on a gag. So you think, well, slinky's funny. You know, he sends it down the stairs. I'm going to change time. I think that's when I think that was my initial thought, and I had something that I thought was funny about that. So I started running with that, and I didn't think it through enough, and I didn't think far ahead enough. And so I've tried not to replicate that mistake again by trying to think things through a little bit more. So maybe that was a good lesson. I don't know.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, the end result worked out. So.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So you mentioned you had some more characters that you were thinking you were planning on introducing.
Yep.
But you still plan on keeping John and Asimov as the main characters?
Definitely. John and Asimov will always be the center of attention, you know, for the most part. And they were the two characters that, you know, I thought of first. And in fact, when I first did it, it was just them two. The strip was pretty much just them two. And the first thing, and they had met some aliens, but they didn't look like the guys that are there now. And there was none of all this other stuff that was there. And it was, you know, because it was more gay. But those are the two guys that, you know, interact the best together. And, they're the ones who came. So, I mean, you know, they'll always be around. And Hugo's kind of a main character, you know, but maybe not quite as important as those two guys. But he'll probably always be around, too.
Okay.
Well, he was in the trailer, so.
Yeah. So, exactly. The three. So, and there's more to the Martians, I guess, than meets the eye. So, and that's part of what's coming up with this next story.
All right.
Neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. Do you have any particular influences? I mean, you got the name of the robot right there.
Yeah. That's pretty obvious.
Anything else that's influenced the creation of your comic? Or?
Yeah, well, I'm a huge Peanuts reader, and I don't know if any of that is actually visible in my strip, but I mean, ever since I was a kid, I just loved the Peanuts and loved the specials, and I have all kinds of Peanuts books here at home. And so, you know, I'm heavily influenced by that, but I don't know if any of that comes through, but, you know, definitely that. Just like everybody, I read Calvin and Hobbes. And, you know, I read comics in the papers for years when I was growing up, especially when I was a teenager, because, you know, my parents got the paper, and I always grabbed the comic section. And here in Chicago, it was Peanuts and, of course, Garfield and all the, which I didn't really read, but stuff like Shoe and Foxtrot and, I read all that stuff.
Yeah.
But, of course, I read comic books, too. So, I was into the superhero thing and everything. So, but I'm just as influenced by other art, even stuff like Pixar, and I love Pixar stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, anything can influence me that kind of gives me a charge. So, a good friend of mine is Steve Ogden, who you guys probably know who he is, and we were always sending each other interesting links about trailers or different artists or illustrations or whatever, and anything like that can influence me at any time. So, and I probably pull a lot of stuff, and I try and learn from a lot of that stuff and somehow incorporate it into my work. So,
neat. Yeah, the Peanuts influence was certainly one of mine too. A similar thing with all the books.
Oh, yeah.
Right. If you're a cartoonist, it's hard not to be, somewhat influenced by him. If you're doing a comic strip,
Right.
Yeah.
He did do a comic strip for 50 years, so.
Yeah. Yeah, whether you're directly or indirectly influenced, the influence is probably there somehow. Yeah.
Right.
Very true.
Yeah.
Yep. He was a master at using his characters, so particularly in the first half of his career. He, in the 80s, I think he started to recycle some stuff, and I know he took some heat with that.
How can you not with that volume of work?
I know.
50 years.
He even used to say, he would talk in some of his interviews and whatever, he talked about, a fan would write him and say, hey, you told this joke 15 years ago, and he's like, why? I've done 25,000 strips. It's really hard to remember each and every one. Right. It'll be slightly different. It's not exactly the same. And sometimes there's a book that shows some of the comparisons. I don't know which one it is, but it's like one time it was the same gag, but it was told by a different character, and so it's pretty interesting. But
yeah,
I only have 71, so I'm not ready for the problem yet.
Yeah, but I could certainly understand how he'd wind up repeating things. I've caught myself doing it, and haven't been doing it for 50 years,
Right? Yeah. You're so focused on the now, that you're not. It's not like you're taking the whole archive of what you've done in your mind at that time. So
exactly.
You just call it a running gag.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Meant to do
gag.
That.
There you go.
Well, sometimes it is. Sometimes it is intentional. Other times, I'm thinking, that comic was great. I was really happy with that one. Then I go back in the archives and say, oh no.
Right. Yeah. Well, if it's funny, maybe that's not such a big
thing. Yeah. But if someone else catches it and calls me on it,
Yep. And they will call you on it.
Yeah. Didn't you do this already? Well, yeah. How about any science fiction influences besides Asimov?
I've read a lot of science fiction and fantasy. So, particularly when I was, starting in junior high, I guess I would say, and I started out reading a lot of fantasy actually. So, certainly Tolkien. Read that I don't know how many over 30 times, and C.S. Lewis and stuff like that. And then I started finding some science fiction stuff, and I really like James P. Hogan, and you'd classify it as hard sci-fi, even though I'm not a science-minded guy, and you don't see a lot of that in my strip because I can't do math outside of a calculator, and I don't understand a lot of the hard sci-fi concepts like a lot of people would, but I still really enjoy it. So, of course mine is a kind of a space opera thing, and I enjoy that stuff too. Like stuff like The Fifth Element, for example. Have you guys seen that movie?
Yeah.
I mean, stuff like that I think is great. So, and that's a space opera, it's kind of over the top, with the, and of course there's always some, massive alien threat or the universe is going to be destroyed and the romance and the whole thing. So, I love stuff like that too. So, movie-wise, stuff like that is great. And then I love stuff like Fifth Element. Did I just say that, Fifth Element? I meant 12 Monkeys.
Oh, yeah.
12 Monkeys is great. So stuff like I really get a charge out of post-apocalyptic themes. So 12 Monkeys, Dark City, stuff like that, I find really interesting. So, you know, all of that is some kind of influence on what I'm, you know, thinking about. But, of course, I, you know, Maroon is never going to be as serious-minded as something like Dark City, or even 12 Monkeys.
No, but it is kind of interesting. You do kind of have a little touch of that apocalypse in the fact that they are marooned. It is, you know, there's
right.
a little bit of a tragedy that they're, you know, that the humor is set in.
Right, exactly. And so I try and bring some of it. There is a serious undertone to the story, so I am trying to still tell somewhat of a serious story. There was a tragedy that happened. I mean, these races are living underground because they can no longer live above ground.
Mm-hmm.
And something
yeah.
did happen, and depending on how closely people paid attention to it, the Gaborga had something to do with it that was unintentional, but they were warned about beforehand. And a lot of this stuff is going to slowly be kind of, paid out during the next story and as time goes on. So there's definitely some more serious themes. So I try to balance the two, and, you know, I don't want to overdo it because it is a comic strip that's only twice a week, so it's a fine line between how much, like, exposition you can get, especially because I'm mostly working with four panels right now, so you can only tell so much.
Yeah. I see you've done some double-sized ones, those kind of like giving you almost like another update in there.
Yeah, exactly. And I haven't done many of those lately, partly because I'm trying to, you know, write the other stuff, and I'm kind of tying things up, and frankly, this is faster to do just the four panels. But,
yeah.
And I also up the size I'm working at, so which has really helped me a lot. So I'm working at, like, almost double size. So if I'm going to do a double panel, I have to it's a little more work. But I like doing them, and it's just more work. So life has been a little hectic lately around here, so I'm keeping it simple.
What time of year?
But for my 50th strip, I did like this whole full page thing with some design stuff on the side and everything, and so that was kind of fun. And I spent some extra time on the weekend to do that. So I like doing stuff like that when I can. I'm trying to be a little more cognizant because I want to get this stuff in print at some point, even if it's just in black and white, to be a little more consistent, at least in relative sizes, so that when it is time to get it in there, that it'll fit together somehow. If I have 15 different, you know, configurations of strips, it's going to be a real pain. So I'm trying to rein that in just a little bit.
Sure. So you're prepared ahead of time instead of looking at the strip, looking at the page, and saying, now what?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm going to have some of those problems with some of my earlier stuff, but, I mean, it's not a huge deal, but,
yeah,
you know.
What format book do you think you would do? Like a comic-shaped one? Or?
I'm not sure. Like, right now I'm trying to figure out a way just, like, to do an ash can type of thing.
Sure.
In just in black and white, and I think I'm going to end up doing it at FedEx office place here and doing it that way. But eventually, you know, I want to do the whole, you know, full-blown color, you know, book. But, you know, I'm thinking about doing a convention this year. Well, you know, we'll see how things go. But you've got to have, different levels of things. So I'd like to have something, you know, that's inexpensive, you know, give people a taste that you can sell for, you know, just a few bucks.
Sure.
And then, you know, kind of work your way up there. So I think I'm going to try and do that. I'm working on kind of putting that together right now and kind of do a test and see how it comes out. But I'm thinking I can get something done that's maybe, like, I don't know, 16 or 20 pages. If it's just 8.5 by 11, you know, folded in half. Mm-hmm. And I can reconfigure, I've already done a couple test pages where I can reconfigure my panels so that, like, if it's a four panel, it's two panels on top and two panels on bottom, you know,
okay.
like a square. And I could do that so it's large enough where it's readable, and yet it still makes sense. So, and that's where I'm going to have some trouble with some of my bigger, strange configured strips. But I'll figure it out. But I think I'm going to be able to do that. So I'm going to start doing that. I mean, I don't have a huge readership or clamoring for books just yet, so I've got some time to figure that out.
Yeah. But for the, I did a couple 8.5 by 11 books, just bring around local comic stores for free comic book day, that sort of thing.
And that's great, yeah.
I would put two strips per page. I'd rotate them.
Uh huh.
So.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Sideways. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have to rotate the book to read it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's now. That's how the Super Fogies book came. I ordered Brock's book, and so or was it the Pinkerton? I think they're both that way. Pinkerton Park and Super Fogies are that way, and it's just it felt weird to me. I mean, you could certainly read it that way, but you're so used to reading it the other way. It was like. Yeah. I was like, huh, that's odd. And if I print, I notice if I print mine that way, it's a little smaller than I'd like it to be, as far as like the text and everything.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh man, I don't know. And you could probably fit more that way. So then I thought, well, you could do it that way, but you could staple it on the other side. But
that's
then
true.
You're getting it to the cut, actually
you
cutting
it. Actually
pages.
Cutting it, yeah.
Yeah.
Where
you're
I would
adding
just, yeah.
Yep. And then you got a weird sized book.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you know, so it's, you know, hard to. Now Peanuts put out books like that. And, you know, I've got like I have four of them sitting right here. In that format. So, I mean, it's certainly been done. I've seen other books done that way too, but so I don't know. I'll probably play around with a couple different ideas and see what works best and what I can actually get done, you know, with a small amount of money.
Yeah.
Right.
Make back. So, you know, everything is low budget right now. I mean, I've only been doing this for 9 months, so everything's coming out of my pocket, basically.
Yeah. Well, you find if there is some demand for printed books, there's always the print-on-demand route, too.
Right, yeah.
Where you can just, you know, do it for free, basically, to upload it, and then...
Right, which it seems like a lot of guys do. I mean, it's just that it's really hard to make any money on that at all, and then the price point's a little higher. I just bought...
That's true.
I just bought, you know, Evan Dom, who does Rice Boy? Are you familiar with that? Well, he did Rice Boy, and he did, like, a full-size book for that and everything, and it's really nice and everything. Well, now he's doing he's doing Order of Tales, which is set in the same... universe, essentially. So he's doing that now. So he just released chapter one, essentially, of that, and he did it through Comic Express.
Okay.
And it's just like you were talking about. It's 8.5 by 11 folded over, but it's printed. You know, it's print on demand and stapled and everything. And it's nice. I think it's 24 pages maybe. And I think it was $7 plus shipping. I remember $6.95, something like that. So, you know, it was like $10.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like him and I like supporting him and I think it's cool. But that's high priced. And I'm pretty sure in his forum he mentioned something that they weren't selling well or something, and he's only got more readers than I do.
Yeah.
So I don't know that he's gonna do any more. I think he's gonna wait until the book comes out because, you know, I mean if you go to a store and buy, you know, a Marvel or DC comic, you're going to get, you know, a bigger comic, full color all the way through, and it's $3, you know.
Sure.
$3-$4. So, you know, it's not necessarily apples to apples. I mean, there are some differences there. It's an independent, and so you expect to pay a little more and everything. But still,
yeah.
I mean, if you want people to buy your stuff, and you know, maybe they have a budget for buying stuff, but are they going to want to spend twice the amount of money for, you know, something like that? And so, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's all going to, until I put it out there, I guess I won't really know.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
It also, I guess it depends on what format book you want to do. I mean, like you say, an actual comic book, it could wind up being pretty expensive that way.
Right. Oh,
where,
definitely.
When I did like a 100-page collection of strips on Lulu.com, I was able to put it up there for, you know, $10 plus shipping, which, you know, for a book like that is, you know, relatively reasonable.
Yeah, I was going to say that's relatively reasonable. Now, were you able to turn a profit on that?
Well, it didn't cost me anything to put it up. I will say I'm not going to get rich on that.
Right, yeah. I mean, you're certainly not going to be rich, but at least you can offer it. You know?
Exactly.
So, I mean, there's definitely a good side to doing that, is that you have a product, you know. Now, like, you can order through Lulu, can you order, like, a stack for yourself? You can, right? You just have to pay for it.
I have to pay for it, but I don't pay
but
full
you get
price.
It at,
yeah. At the printing cost plus shipping.
Yeah. Right. So like you could order a box of them and then bring it to a con or something.
Exactly.
So you wouldn't make that much on them, but at least you'd have them.
I'd have something. I think there is a bulk discounts and things. But I am considering looking around. There's some other sites. I think there's one affiliated with Amazon now that is looking into CreateSpace, where the since Lulu raised their prices last year, I'd have to look into it more how CreateSpace works. But I think there it would also sell through Amazon, so that might be a plus.
Now, have you guys seen Tony Pyro's rundown of all the print-on-demand services?
I have seen that article, yeah.
No,
yeah.
I haven't seen that.
So he did like a whole, he researched like all Lulu and Comic Express and Cafe, you know, and all of them. And he found this company in Canada that he worked with that he got a really good product, and they were the least expensive to do, and they were, you know, I guess real knowledgeable and everything. You'd have to read the article. I'm kind of paraphrasing him. But so I bought his book, you know, definitely partly to see it, but probably because I like Tony and I kind of like his strip too, but I wanted to see the book too. And it's nicely done. I think he's charging $16 for it, so it's, you know, it's a full-color book. It's, you know, a big book, and I'm not sure exactly how many pages are in it, maybe 50 or something. So, but I know that, you know, he paid way less for that than, like, if he would have done it through some of these other services. So
Can,
if you look around, you can find, you know, places that, you know, smaller shops that aren't like, you know, big corporations or whatever like this that are, you know, churning the stuff out like that, that you can get a better deal. You just got to do a little more legwork. But if you check out his article, he's got the link to the place. And
yeah.
I think a couple of other people have checked it out since he's done it too. So I'm definitely going to check them out. If I ever do a colored book, they're going to be one of my first stops. So.
Oh, yeah. If I was going to do color, I'd have to look around a little more because I know some of the print-on-demand color prices are just...
outlandish, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yep. I mean, it's, and color's so expensive. So, I mean, that's the nicest product to have, but obviously, you got to pay for it.
Yep. Because, yeah, people have expressed an interest in that. It's just, you know, I don't know, how am I going to do it?
Right. Yep. So it's like, you know, it's always great to have it, but I mean, we're the ones who are putting the money up front, and
yeah,
you know, you're talking, if you're going to do any decent size run, you're talking thousands of dollars.
Yeah,
for the most part. So, and that's great if you turn around and sell them all, but you still got to come up with that whatever X amount first, and that can be the tricky part.
Very true.
And even going the print-on-demand route, even if you're not paying anything to upload the file, I mean, it does take time to put the file together.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, to format the thing and upload it.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I mean, Tony's the one who convinced me to start working in CMYK, like, for that very reason. My first trips were all in RGB and everything.
Yeah.
And then we were talking, he's like, you know, you really should do CMYK, because then you're going to have to go back and convert everything and worry about out-of-gamut colors and everything. And I'm like, you know, that's a really good idea. So I've been doing that for a while, just so that's at least one less thing I'll have to do.
Yeah, I know a lot of that stuff does turn out different when print out an RGB one CMYK.
Yeah, you don't want any nasty surprises. Now, of course, some of the digital printing stuff is all RGB anyway, so it just depends on how you do it. I mean, it depends.
Yeah.
It's only a problem if you're doing like a traditional offset printing, but through some of that RGB stuff can come out weird too. It's just, you know, it's all trial and error, I guess.
Yeah. I'd put some color stuff on the back cover of the book, and you know, it's not that it came out looking bad, it's just some of it did come out looking different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you kind of want to control that. You don't want any unexpected surprises that might not look so good.
Exactly. So, I mean, a full book of it would kind of... You know.
Yeah, that would be bad. Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to have something on the back cover and have a whole book that's just wrong and you're stuck with, you know, 10 boxes of them or whatever. Yeah. That would be a bummer.
Yeah, you make it a collector's edition somehow.
Yeah, there you go. I'll even sign them.
Yeah.
You'll just buy it.
Yeah, it's the alternate universe where the colors all look a little different.
Yeah, there you go.
The light of an alien sun.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, there you go. There's always a little spin you can put on it, right?
Yeah.
Great thing about science fiction. You can justify anything.
Exactly. You can always, you know, come up with a little story.
Yeah. It's like computer programming. It's not a bug. It's a feature.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. One thing Mark and I were thinking of as a topic recently, and it would actually kind of tie in with your comic, is the science fiction villain. And uh-huh. where you had Bob with that dramatic entrance there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like you have some other great kind of villain ideas coming up.
Yeah, I get not so much villain, it's just alien.
Antagonist.
Yeah, antagonist. There you go.
Yeah.
So it's gonna be interesting. One, I don't want to give anything away, but two, I'm still not quite sure what I'm going to do. So, but I actually did, on Steve's suggestion, I actually got some Sculpey, that sculpting material, and did a sculpture because I was having a really hard time visual. I drew this new character, and I had sketched it for a couple days, and I was starting to get it where I wanted to, and then I basically had it like from the front and from the side, and then I started trying to draw like different angles, and I couldn't get it. And he's like, if you make a sculpture of it, and then you'll have a sculpture, and then you can look at it, and it'll help you. I'm like, hey, that's a pretty good idea. But I had never done it before, so it came out okay. I did it and everything, but now I can at least, kind of turn it at that one angle, and even if it's not the exact pose you want, it's like, now I have something to kind of base it off of, which makes it a lot easier. So I'm going to do that, too, I think, at least with you. I don't know if I could do John. He'd be really hard, I think. But I'm going to try and do it with you, too, because there's certain ways that Hugo and the Martians like him, I have a really hard time drawing. It's like not quite sure where the arm is and relate. Sometimes there was one strip where the arm was actually higher than the mouth, and I redrew it because it looked so bad, but it's like so I'm going to have to do that too one of these days. I haven't another thing on the list that I don't have time for right now.
Yeah.
But it's been helpful, so.
Yeah, to actually have a model to refer to. I can see how that would be very helpful.
Definitely.
Because I know when I was first doing rough sketches for Station V3 and working on the characters and stuff, there's, what was going to be a main character that I just wound up throwing out because I couldn't figure out how to draw him at certain angles.
Yeah, that's a bummer, because you want, you hate to do that. But what I'd really like to do is get them all modeled in CGI, which I can do. It's just really time consuming.
Yeah.
And it's been so long since I worked in, I have XSI here. And since I've got a new computer and it's a big problem swapping licenses and everything, so I mean, I downloaded Blender, which is open source and free, but it's just not something I have time for now. But once I have if I had a 3D version of Hugo, for example, all rigged up, then I can just open it up and pose it however I want and just look at it,
Yeah.
So, I mean, that would be just as helpful, if not more helpful, than having a sculpture, because if you have him rigged up, you can actually move him. So I'm thinking about doing that, too, but it's just, again, finding time to do it.
Yeah. It seems like cartoon anatomy is something so many artists struggle with,
Yeah.
It's like it's not quite realistic, but that can send you off in some weird directions.
It's not human anatomy, so
yeah.
It's like, you make up this goofy character, and you're like, okay, well, it's hard to visualize it because you've never actually seen it. So that's
right.
I just started reading Astray 3 by Eldon Kauger. I don't know if you're familiar with that. But he's got some pretty strange characters, but he's amazing because he draws them, they look the same no matter at what angle, and at the beginning of the story, he's got, like, crowds of all these, I don't know how he did it, man, just crowds of all these different aliens and, in perspective, just all done, and it just makes me weep. So, you come across stuff like that, and you just, I go into my case, and I just, break all my pencils and throw my markers away. So, it's like, it's just not worth it anymore. But, I mean, some guys can do it, but they have chops that I don't. So,
I'm not the only one who does that.
Yeah, I know. It's that's a common thing among artists, even really good artists. They're just we all seem to have this problem of this I suck problem, and I don't really know what I'm doing, and all my drawings are terrible. And I've found that interesting that as I've talked to artists who I really admire, and are, like Steve Ogden is often that way, and I think he's an amazing artist. So it's interesting. It's for some reason we seem to all share that.
Yeah.
Crew.
Yeah. Just along the lines of getting back to the model, the 3D models and, you know, sculptures and things like that, just on the subject of webcomics and other medium, I guess, with your trailers, and you got some other little animations on your site I've seen.
Yeah.
Is that something you're thinking of doing more with?
Definitely. So I did, yeah, I did the trailers. Steve helped me with the trailers. He did the voices. Well,
yeah.
First I was just going to do my, there's two versions. My version is done in Flash, and then he took all my assets. He's like, he got charged by the idea. He's like, I'm going to do another version. Do you mind? I'm like, no, please, you know. So, but when I was first talking, I just had a script, and I was just going to have, like, words flying by and everything. He's like, well, why don't you do voices? And I'm like, well, I don't really have the right equipment to record everything here. And he's like, well, I can record it, and I can do voices. And I'm like, okay, here's the script. You know? And so it's like, two, you know, like a week later, he had it to me, and it, I was like, oh, this is awesome. So he did. He did his in a 3D program, so his is a little more dynamic in that way. But yeah, so that was a lot of fun. I don't know how useful that is. I know some other comics have done it and everything. I mean, I hope you hope it's entertaining. But but the other thing I did, the Flash Puppet Theater thing,
yeah,
that's actually tied into the story. So I plan on doing more of those again. It's just a matter of finding time. But I did that one in about a week. I probably spent like 15 hours on it. But part of that was figuring out exactly how to do certain things, which I wouldn't have to figure out again. But you know, it's like 15 seconds long. It's really short. But it is actually, it does actually tie into the story. And depending, again, it's one of those things of how close are you actually paying attention. And it actually ties into something that's going to happen tomorrow, which is actually interesting. So I plan on to do more of those, and they'll just be kind of, you know, little vignettes into either things that have happened in the past or with other characters or whatever. So, you know, just, you know, I want to have kind of like this whole marooned universe where it doesn't all have to be the comic. There can be, you know, there's the trailer and the Flash Puppet Theater. And then there's the, I don't know how much of the archive you guys have gone through, but I did this kind of alternate comic. It's called The Amazing Adventures of Dr. Hugo Fandian.
Yeah.
You saw that one.
I saw that, yeah.
Okay, so it was the week before Christmas, I think. Yeah. And that was like a full-page thing. And that is also part of the Marooned Universe, and I don't want to say when that happened or who exactly that was, but I'm planning on doing more of those, and I think I have the next one of that scripted out. And I'm thinking I might put that as an extra in, like, the ash can or something to kind of give a little bonus to any people who buy that. So I'm thinking about doing that. So,
nice.
But so stuff like that. So there's kind of like, you know, I'm trying to think of different ways to make it fun and to make it interesting for the readers, and especially since I don't update every day. So when you come, there's more to look at than just the comic. And there's the little side website for the NFF that, I don't know how many people actually find it, but there's a logo on the right sidebar. It says NFF on it, and that's the New Frontier Federation, and that's the kind of the NASA that sent up Asimov and John in the first place. And there's some clues on that page about certain things if you're paying really close attention. So there's that as well. So I'm trying to come up with innovative ideas like that to kind of build up the richness of the universe, so to speak, and. So those are kind of the things that I'm trying to do differently.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's fun stuff.
Yeah. So and it's fun doing, too. So.
Yeah. I haven't done too much of that sort of thing, but I have, from time to time, I think there's a couple of them on the forum, just written a couple little short stories that are set in the universe.
Uh-huh.
It just does, you know, doesn't really tie in with anything, but it's just, you know,
Something fun to do, something different.
Fun, yeah. Exactly, something fun, yeah. Something different.
Ironically, just today, I introduced some fiction of other stuff happening in the universe, you know, in the Zortik universe, that's not about Zortik. So, I think that sort of stuff adds a lot.
Yeah, I think that's cool to do, and I mean, you guys have been going for so much longer than I have that you've got a depth that I don't even have yet. So, you know, I think as you go along and you build all this time, I mean, now you've got like all this history, and I think it just opens up more possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can bring stuff back and bring old storylines, you know, follow up on them and stuff. Yeah,
sure,
definitely.
Yeah. So a little note for the listener that when we're talking about today and tomorrow and that sort of thing, yeah, go back a month or so.
Right, right.
Yep, exactly.
Try to get up a little faster than that, but, you know.
Yeah, things happen.
Things get busy, yeah.
Yep.
We have done the one live show, and that was an interesting experience.
Yeah. I can imagine. I did the TGT podcast on Sunday.
Okay, yeah.
So that was kind of interesting. That was on TalkShoe or whatever. And so,
yeah.
Yes.
Ask questions or whatever. So that was neat.
Yeah. Our one experience with TalkShoe when we did the call-in show was a TalkShoe freezing on us partway through. And
yeah.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about that, so it's just, I don't know if it depends on your equipment or where you are or whatever, or maybe it depends on how many people are actually using the service. I bet you that has a lot to do with it.
It could, yeah. It was going pretty well for a while. Fortunately, we had a couple people join us through Skype, so we could kind of keep the live show going, and TalkShoe kept recording for about 4 hours even after we were done with the call.
Jeez. It's a neat service. I mean, a lot of the stuff that's come out in the last year or two is really neat, and you know, it'll get better as time goes on.
Yeah, yeah,
true.
Yeah, we aren't really paying for it, so we can't really complain.
Yeah,
that
really.
Much,
how, you know? Yeah, how much can you really complain?
Yeah,
not too much.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fun thing though, getting to talk to some of the other cartoonists and. Even some of the readers.
I've really found the web cartoonist community to be a really friendly one, and it's been like the biggest pleasant surprise that I didn't expect. You know, and I've actually made some good friends. You know, Steve has just become a really good friend of mine, and met a lot of just really great artists, and everybody seems willing and to talk. You know, talk about the craft and just It's just interesting to see other people's approaches and how they create characters and, you know, read their strips. And it's just, fun is probably the big, you know, the main word I would use, about it. It's a great creative outlet. It's a lot of fun. So I'm really good, really glad I started it.
Yeah.
Do you have any conventions that you're planning on attending in the future or near future?
I'd really like to do one this year. That's why I'm trying to figure out if I can print this book. And, I mean, I'm here in Chicago, so Wizard World is right here.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if that's, like, the right one for me to do. I mean, they have Artist Alley there, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I don't know enough, and I haven't been there. I've been to it, but it's probably hasn't been for, like, 5 years. So I'm just starting this week to kind of look at the schedule. Someone mentioned there's one in Kansas City, which isn't too far away. That's, like, a smaller con. I don't know if I want to. I don't know if I have travel in the budget this year or not. So, but I mean, like I said, Wizard World's right here. I mean, it's literally a half hour away from me. So, if I could just, get my act together before then. I mean, it's.
If you don't have to pay for travel, that's.
I mean, it's just,
what do you have to lose?
Just get a table, you know. So, I mean, it gives me. I probably have like 5 months before, to figure it out. So, if I can get the books and one of my readers. Who lives out in San Diego and does the con out there. He's just kind of a graphic artist. He doesn't even actually have a web cartoon so much right now. But he's done a bunch of cons and sold a lot of his artwork. And he, like, asked me, I'll send you some stuff and I'll show you what to do. And I just got the package the other day. And he made, like, a bunch of one-inch buttons for me and a couple bookmarks and stuff.
Nice.
And he's like, this is the kind of stuff you can do, and it's like, it's what you want to have. You want to have some things, to sell for $1 and then for a couple dollars, and then, a whole different, so people stop and actually look at what you got, and maybe you can engage them with some drawings or whatever. So these are the things that are all new to me that I have to figure out. So, but he even said that he would, maybe help me out with making some stuff for me if I really want to do it. So, but I just got to give him enough notice or whatever. So I got to kind of sit down and look at what I have. I mean, I only have 71 strips. I mean, so it's not that many. So I don't know, how many books or whatever I can make out of it. And so, but I got some ideas for a T-shirt right now and trying to figure all this stuff out. So the plan is, long story short, the plan is I hope to at least do one this year.
Okay.
And maybe that'll be it. I don't know. At least it'll be interesting to give it a shot and see what it's like. So.
Yeah. True.
How are you planning on doing the t-shirt? Are you getting a local place to print them up? Are you doing...
Yeah, well, it's interesting what happened is through Facebook I met a couple guys that I went to grammar school with that I haven't seen in like 30 years. And these are guys that I grew up with, that I was really close with. And we had dinner last weekend, and I'd like reconnected to this guy, and it was great and everything. But the whole point of this is the one guy, he's like, hey, you should do some t-shirts. He's like, I used to, he's like a fabricator, and he does all this great sculpture and everything, and does all this crazy stuff. And he's like, I've got all the silkscreen equipment at home, and I can make shirts for you. Oh. And I'm like, oh, great. Because, yeah, I mean, the big expense, you know, is going to a place and having, you know, the screens made and the whole thing. And he's like, I'll help you out, you know. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to come up with the thing, and he's going to help me out with that. And so basically it'll probably just be materials and, I don't know, a case of beer or whatever, basically, you know.
Yeah.
So that's the big help. So, and I won't have to, you know, print 100 of them. I could do, you know, 10 of them or something.
Nice.
Sure.
You know, just to start out. And then the other thing I wanted to do is I wanted to have, like, a working model of Asimov.
Ooh.
Now, maybe not life-size, but something on the table or, to attract attention, obviously.
Yeah.
So, now, if you're an artist alley, I mean, it kind of limits you to what you can really do. I mean, you can't have something sitting out, like, in front of your table. I don't think that's allowed, particularly in the aisle. And if it's behind the table, you know, I don't know if you could really see it, but I thought, you know, if there was something that was, like, maybe 18 inches tall that was on top of the table,
sure.
And it was, like, a full model and maybe lit up a little bit and beeped and booped or something.
Yeah.
And again, this guy's like, I can make that for you. I can make that happen.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to do it, I'm going to try and do that and, you know, see how it all works out. But, again, you know, a lot of it comes down to how much is it going to cost and everything and can we actually get it done.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
So those are some of the ideas I have. But, I mean, that would be really cool to kind of have it sitting there.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't done any cons yet or anything like that. But if I did, my sister has made me stuffed versions of a couple of the Station B3 characters. I've got
that's cool.
A couple little stuffed Ebbs and also a rumor monger.
See, now I think that would be really popular with your fans. I mean, that's really cool.
Yeah.
So, and you have, it seems that some of your characters really lend themselves towards that.
Yeah.
Towards, like, not necessarily plushes, but stuff. Like, I bought the materials to make a Yugo doll. And I haven't done it yet. But have you guys ever seen the Ugly Dolls?
I think so.
Probably.
Yeah, they're really popular now. I won a whole set of them a few years ago, right when they first started out. They had some kind of online contest, I don't know what site. And I sent this entry in just on a lark almost with some funny comments, and they picked mine, and so they sent me a whole box. But they're just really simple. I don't know if you'd even call them stuffed animals, but they're these stuffed characters, and it's basically just two pieces of felt with stuffing in it and a couple eyes, and there's not much more to it than that, but they're just insanely popular. But they're, you know, they're kind of like handcrafted. Well, at the time they were. I don't know if they are anymore. So they still have that look. So stuff like that seems to be popular.
There's always possibilities of things like that.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah, and innovation in webcomic merchandise. Right?
Yeah. I mean, you got to think of something different, you know.
Yeah.
Try and set yourself apart.
Yeah. Mark, do you have the foil helmets ready yet?
As a matter of fact, I started, I ordered some... stickers today, and then I'm going to just probably go to Sam's Club, get a gigantic roll of aluminum foil, and ready to go.
Yep.
There you go.
Custom made.
All right.
One could be better.
Yep.
So that's going to be different. Yeah, you can't, certainly not many.
Not something I've seen before. So.
Yep. Not many webcomics giving out foil helmets.
Yeah. Not many.
Yeah. And if that doesn't work, you can always hit him with the frisbee.
Exactly.
Yeah, there you go.
Exactly what I'm thinking.
Yes. Are you going to do a new Zordic frisbee with the reboot?
Probably. Well, I still have, I think, a pretty much full box of of the old one, so got a lot to get rid of before.
Got to move the old merchandise first, yeah.
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 You label them Zordic Classic.
Yes.
There you go. cult classic, sort of classic.
Right.
I hope that doesn't make the reboot New Coke.
I was going
to
say.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you don't want that to happen.
I hope that's not.
Yeah, that would be bad.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't want Pepsi profiting on your expense there.
No, definitely not.
The question is, who is Pepsi to Zordix Coke?
Yeah, right.
Well, now that Melonpool's not around.
Oh, yeah.
That's, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the question.
Yes. Yeah. I have no nemesis.
Oh, we're, yes. We're getting back to Bob territory again here now.
Yeah, so.
That's right.
You need your con,
right? Right.
Speaking of cons, that's a bad segue. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah.
But that is sad news. Speaking of con, about Ricardo Montalban.
Yes, I saw that
earlier this evening.
Yeah, and Pat Patrick McGowan today too.
Yeah.
So you don't want to speculate on is this going to be they come in threes and who the
right.
three is?
Yeah, no kidding.
There's no rush on this, you know. we don't need to know.
Good point.
Garcia and I just got a message from this guy telling me he could. I posted a rough design on the blog, and he's like, he saw it already. And he's like, I can make those for you. So he's like on it.
Wow.
So I got to talk to him tomorrow about that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's always good to have.
My wife actually had a shirt made for me for Christmas, and she had it. There's a friend of my mom has one of those like really expensive embroidering machines.
Oh, wow.
That will do like anything. So just on the sly, she got like a picture of Hugo and brought it over there. And unfortunately, they didn't. You know, my wife doesn't really know much about computers and Photoshop images or anything. So she had a low res image. And the guy tried to blow it up, and he had all kinds of problems with it, and. She's like, and she even said to me, I'm trying to do something for your birthday, and I need to ask you a question, but I can't because it'll ruin it. And she didn't answer. And so I got the shirt, and I, you know, it came out okay. I mean, I was really surprised. I thought it was great. It's a really neat gift, and it's embroidered Hugo. I mean, you know, the color's off, and there's a weird line where the shading was, you know, I couldn't get the shading off. But it's really neat, and it says Hugo on the top and everything. So it was kind of, it's the first thing that I, you know, I ever had that was, like, had something of maroon on it. You know?
Nice,
so,
yeah.
So it's kind of, it'll definitely be a treasured item.
Yeah. I had something similar to that from, again, my sister, or maybe it was my brother, with a Station V3 t-shirt done with, you know, iron-on transfer.
Oh, there you go. That's
yeah.
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. My mom used to have a embroidery business, so I had a Zortik template made up, and I was producing some embroidered Zortik shirts and hats and... Got a few things.
That's cool.
Yeah.
It's always, you know, nice to have the help on this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's kind of tough though, because it's kind of one of those things that, you know, I found, you know, trying to produce these. It seems a little high end for most comic crowds. You know.
Yeah.
The T-shirts seem to go a lot easier.
Right.
Yeah.
It's tough with the t-shirts because it's like a lot of times it's not even something that's specifically related to your strip. It's just something that's funny and
right.
You know, it seems but like it's some kind of pop culture reference or something. I forget if it's Goats who had the Grover Field t-shirt, and it had nothing to do with his comic, but it was a funny thing, and I don't know how many he sold of them, but you know, so And I don't know, my mind doesn't work that way with the whole pop culture references, and I don't really seem to come up with things that way. So,
yeah.
And then sometimes you run into, well, is that, you know, like with Grover Field, I mean, that's definitely copyright infringement. Now, he printed them up anyway, but I mean, they could definitely come after you with that, and it's like, I don't need that kind of trouble.
Yeah.
So, I would probably shy away from doing something like that.
Yeah, t-shirt ideas are, that's one of the things that's stopping me. It's, you know, apart from the whole process of having to get t-shirts made, but,
right.
You gotta have a shirt that's, you know, something to put on it, you know, something
right.
that
right.
people are gonna be interested in.
It's tricky because, I mean, if you come up with the idea, you may think it's neat, but that doesn't matter. It's got to be something that your readers like and want to buy.
Exactly.
And that's why I kind of reached out to my readers and said, you know, tell me what you think is interesting. And mm-hmm. I got like one response. So, but I went with that, and the guy that kind of gave me the genesis of the idea liked it. So, you know, maybe I'll sell one to him.
Nice.
That's good.
So, you know, one sale is, you know, that's a start.
Yes.
So they say you could expect basically 1% of your readers, right? So I think I have somewhere between 400 and 500 is my best guess.
Yep.
So that's like four or five people.
Okay.
But, you know, that'd be fine.
Yeah. That's a good start, right?
Yeah, no kidding. That starts
somewhere. Yeah. So sometimes I'm amazed that four or five people read it, let alone more than 100. So I'll take it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's always a little bit of a surreal experience when you start thinking that, you know, hey, there's more people that are reading this than I'm related to. So.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's especially when you hear from some of them, and it's, you know, it really shows, you know, people are reading, and
mm-hmm.
that you don't know these people.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the coolest. The coolest part for me was when people started commenting, and I got comments from people that were not just other webcomic artists, you know, people that I met through a webcomic forum or other artist friends, because, or like family members, you know, that try and support you early on. That's all fine and cool. But when comments and, you know, faces started showing up that I had no idea who these people were, then that almost gives you that sense of validation of, okay, there's somebody that does it, that's reading this, that is not just reading it because, you know, my mom told them to, or it's my friend. They're reading it because they like it. And that was like, you know, that's a big step.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of my favorite con experiences is, you know, when I was, you know, standing in line waiting to meet, you know, somebody that you're a fan of, and all of a sudden they look up and realize who you are, and they're jumping at you. It's like, no, I'm here to see you.
Yeah, I'm here for you.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I can't, that would be interesting for sure.
Yeah. One thing I found lately that, not just lately, but that's helped out is advertising. It's really brings a lot of people in, especially if you have an ad that's working well.
Yeah.
Are you talking like Project Wonderful?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do a little bit of that. I mean, obviously you've got to put the cash out, but it does bring the readers.
Yeah.
So the tricky part is how many of them stay around. But I found that, I mean, it really makes a difference on where you advertise, obviously. I mean, because, I mean, I've had ads on, I'm pretty sure, on both your sites, definitely on Station V3.
Yes.
And Light Schlock Mercenary. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, those sites tend to, you know, you look at the page views per reader or whatever, and they seem to do really well. In fact, I seem to always, I don't know how it happens, but I seem to get a small handful of hits every day from Station V3.
Well, you're on the Lens page.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's through that or if it's, but sometimes it doesn't seem like it's coming through there, because I can dig through depending on which analytics I'm looking at and see, and it's not always through the links page, and I'm like not running an ad at that moment, so I go to the link, but there's no mention there, and I'm like, maybe it's like, the only thing I can think of is sometimes you get like a cached Project Wonderful ad.
Yeah, that could be it.
You know, that's the only thing I could think of that might be, but I'll, you know, you'll take it. You'll take those.
Sure.
Yeah, really.
I've heard of people saying things that, depending on what stats they're looking at, that they sometimes get results like that. Like a week after they place the ad, and the ad's done,
right.
and now it's showing up in the stats, and it seems a little odd to them.
which is why I like to have different packages of the analytics running, because you can, it's a little easier to, I think, kind of get a little more accurate picture of, and, you know, they don't all report the same, so, you know, I've got WordPress stats running, obviously, and then I got Google Analytics running, and then I run Clicky, so I can kind of circle back with all three of them and kind of get a full picture, you know. And even in FeedBurner, you could look in FeedBurner and get, but their stats are pretty lame, but you can still get some idea of what's going on, and so you kind of look at all of them and try and get a picture of what's happening. But yeah, I mean, Project Wonderful has been pretty decent for me. I mean, I wish I could spend more on it, because I think it does work.
Yeah.
Basically, I throw like $5 a time at it, basically. Because, you know, it adds up. I do it twice. I post twice a week, so if I want to do $5 every time I post, I'm going to be like $40 a month.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. I try to, it doesn't always work out this way, but I try to have the ads pay for themselves, just, you know, the ads on the site pay for the ads I'm running.
Right. Yeah. Well, you guys have a lot more traffic than me, so. That's, I'm not quite to that point yet, but I mean, I like the most I've made is like $1.50 in a week.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of success just recently. I've started just like a penny campaign on Project Wonderful, and just put like, you know, anything for 2 cents, you know, and think I focused it on, you know, science fiction or something, but you know, and that way, you know, a lot of these ones that just have like nobody bidding. Yeah,
right.
gets out there on a lot of, you know, fairly minor sites, but actually I've been doing pretty well with it. I'm kind of pleasantly surprised.
Yeah,
I got to try that. Tony Perro mentioned that to me too, that he runs campaigns, and I've not tried that yet, but I'm gonna have to give that a shot.
I've got a penny campaign running too, which I think I didn't even restrict it to science fiction. I just told him, okay, give me everything.
Anything
for a penny, as long as it's getting maybe over 250 page views a day.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's not a bad idea, yeah.
And
you just you cap it on a monetary limit, how much you're going to spend, or how
it
works?
Yeah, I tell it, just a penny bids, no more than a dollar total for the campaign per day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And it actually does pretty well. I mean, the click percentage isn't real high, but there's so many ads.
You get a lot more views.
Yeah. It does pretty well.
I'll try that. Maybe I'll try that tomorrow, especially because I don't have any new ads already. That's the other thing I found that really makes a difference, is generally I come up with new ads every 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And I always notice that, like, so the first week I'll get, you know, a certain percentage or a certain number of clicks, and then it'll go down a little bit, then it'll go down a little bit. Then I'll change the ad, and it'll jump back up a little bit, and then it'll go down, then it'll go. So as long as I keep, I mean, it definitely helps keeping the ads fresh, and I try and keep it running with the storyline. I haven't done that lately, just because I haven't had the time, but it definitely makes a difference.
Yeah, that's something I got to do more of. Do more new ads, and
but
I have the same problem. I have the same problem with the ads that I have with the T-shirts. So you know.
Yeah, exactly. And what to do? Yeah, that's why I try and tie it with my current storyline, because a lot of times I'll just use the same artwork, but
it kind of
saves the time. But yeah, it definitely makes the difference, especially because I'm always running an ad on Schlock Mercenary. Well, if they start seeing that same ad over and over and over, and they just stop seeing it,
right?
Because they're so used to seeing it. So
true.
Then you put something different there, and like, oh, I remember what that is, and then they may check it out. So.
Yeah, it's funny. I had my most success with an ad when I started using the current storyline or something at least fairly recent, just art from the strips in the ad. Especially like a skyscraper ad. And the weird thing is I tried to do the same sort of thing, keep it fresh. And the weird thing is I found that the ad that I was using wasn't getting stale. You've probably seen the Station V3 monolith ad. That's been around. And I tried doing a similar ad after that, just using another strip. And I noticed, you know, it just wasn't working out as well. So I put the monolith one back up, and you know, the clicks just shot right back up.
Wow, yeah.
And it's...
Yeah, if you go to something that works, man, keep pushing it, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's more than a month old at this point, and it's still working.
Right.
So.
Right. I mean, I definitely save the ones that seem to do well, because you can always, like, rotate them back in, too.
Exactly, yeah.
You know?
Sure.
Yeah, so... Yeah, some people, like, I think... I've seen some people that'll, like, particularly a skyscraper will, especially if you've got, like, a three-panel gag or something, that they'll, like, stack the panel so they have the full one there. And so they actually, you know, it's actually putting your strip there. Obviously, it's smaller, but if you've got the kind of characters and strip where you could do it that way, then you can give people a taste. Or they put the punchline panel in there. I tried that once. So,
yeah, that's what I've done with the two of the recent skyscrapers. I just took the strip, and I had to redo the text because it was unreadable that small.
I thought
it was anyway.
Right, you're going to have to make some adjustments. But
so, basically,
I have tried that.
Make the balloons bigger or simplify the text or a combination, and that worked out pretty well.
Right. And then one time I did one, just because my wife had a funny reaction. There was a panel, one of the strips had a panel where Hugo was running, and it just struck her as funny. She thought it was a really funny thing, so I took that panel and made that like the center part of the ad and wrote like a funny saying with it, something about running Martians and come see what it's all about. I don't remember what I exactly said, but and that ad did fairly well too. So, just funny pictures. So, funny pictures always good.
Well, I guess maybe that if it works as an ad, maybe that would work as a T-shirt.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Something to think about.
Where I don't know if putting a whole strip on a shirt, like the way I'm putting with the ads, I don't know if that would work. But
yeah, I don't know.
It's simple enough, I would think. It might be worth a shot.
You know, one thing you could do, though, to get T-shirt ideas is go to these sites like Threadless.com and all that and see what people are doing, because they just pump out new ideas constantly, because they take submissions and then they get the stuff submissions get voted up and everything, and then they print the most popular stuff, and then people buy them. So you go in there and you kind of see, you can at least get ideas of what kind of thing is popular. I haven't done that in a while, but I'm going to do that and just, get an idea. Even to get ideas on, like, stylistic things, and whatever.
Sure. You never know where you're going to find a good idea.
Yeah,
very
exactly.
True.
Yeah. If it's a site that involves, what T-shirts people like, well, that's...
Yeah.
So I don't know if you have anything else you want to talk about, or if you want to wrap it up pretty soon. I guess we've been on about an hour or so.
Yeah. Time has flown. I should probably be getting to bed. Maybe it's time to wrap it up. I get up at like 5 a.m., so...
Oh,
yeah.
Geez.
Yeah.
I'm starting to drag.
Yeah.
All right.
This has been really enjoyable, you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, sure.
It's been a lot of fun, and it's good talking to you guys. I've read both your comics.
Oh, thanks.
Great.
Definitely look up you guys as veterans in the field.
Jeez. Wow.
Wow.
But yeah, it's great having you on. When we started this, it was really kind of starting to look at, what's out there in terms of science fiction comedy. Mm-hmm. And, your strip obviously is something that's jumping right into the genre that we're kind of looking at a lot. And
so it's
a perfect fit. So it's
Yeah,
work.
Definitely. And, thank you. Appreciate it.
I've been reading it loyally since I've discovered it. So
yeah,
oh,
same here.
Yeah,
really. Thank you.
Yeah,
that's high
work.
Praise from you guys. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well,
see, you never know those things. So that's great.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Well, we have been Tom Truskowski from Station V3. And Tom Delaringa, got it that
there you
time?
Go.
All right, of Marooned Comic at maroonedcomic.com. And I am Mark Meckes of Zortik.com. Tom, you want to do your spiel?
Oh, sure. If anyone has any questions, comments, concerns, feedback, anything like that, you can contact us at podwarp1999@comicostrich.com, or you can join us on the forum at forum.comicostrich.com.
Thank you very much. Tune in next time. Until then, see you later.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
The intro and outro music is Earth's Assault on the Central AI by Tetix from the album Technology Crisis. A link to Tetix's website is available on the Podwarp 1999 website.